My special guest in the studio is an accomplished pianist and composer in both the classical and jazz idioms. He studied at both the Sydney Conservatorium of Music and New York State's Eastman School of Music. And during his career, he's composed symphonies, concertos, theatre scores and choral works alongside a stellar career as a jazz pianist in a variety of settings, including solo, trio and ensemble. He's worked with jazz legends including Dave Holland, Roy Haynes and other luminaries including James Muller, Jay Anderson and Vinnie Colaiuta. His uncle was the esteemed UK guitarist Ike Isaacs, and he's here today to chat about Ike Isaacs himself, Mark Isaacs. Welcome
Thanks,
back
Frank.
To Now's the Time.
It's good to be back again.
It's great to have you back. Mark, the jazz community around the world is about to celebrate the 100th anniversary on the 1st of December, on the birth of Uncle Ike. At this point, I can also clarify for listeners that we're talking about the guitarist and not the Ohio bassist who recorded with Eddie Lockjaw Davis and Benny Green. This is Ike Isaacs, the guitarist, and he spent most of his career in the UK.
He did.
But spent the latter part of his life here in Sydney, where he touched a lot of people's lives. Firstly, can you tell us about the uncle and tell us about the man?
Yes, well, I'm glad you asked that, because with Ike, his music is well-loved and it's beautiful. But what I've realised is how much the man, and I knew it before, but it's become back to me so much now at this occasion of this celebration, is how much the man sort of made an impression on people. He's a very giving, very mentoring kind of man. He just loved to be, and it was, when I say mentoring, he probably didn't think of that way. That's how other people spoke about, oh, I was mentored by Ike, including Martin Taylor, who we just heard, who sort of cites Ike as his main mentor. But Ike didn't, I think, see it that way. I think he just loved to share and talk, and he'd be as interested in what another guitarist was doing is what, you know, he might be able to impart to them. And that was the same. He knew all the famous guitarists. He was friends with Wes Montgomery and Joe Pass and George Benson. But, you know, I've spoken to many amateur, unknown guitarists who just come up to me and say, oh, I met your uncle. It was at somebody's house and spent about half an hour with him. It changed my whole thinking about the guitar, you know. So I just think that Ike was sort of remembered both for his music and, you know, especially for his being. And that's come out in this tribute album from musicians all around the world, what they've offered musically for this compilation, but also the words and the tributes that are printed in the CD jacket. It's very gratifying as a nephew to feel that. Something to sort of try and live up to, really.
And it's a fascinating life story, too. He was born in Burma.
He was, in
then,
Rangoon.
Then found himself in India.
Yep.
And then went to the UK at, what, the age of 19 or 20?
Something like that, in the late 40s, yeah. So, no, he would have been, yeah, that's about right. He would have been quite young.
And you say that he was just as happy to feed you a curry as he was to a bit of a jam.
He loved to cook. And whenever musicians came round, he'd always cook something special. And, you know, Martin Taylor says, oh, you know, I remember hanging out with Ike when I was young and the Burmese curry. And he'd always, and his wife Moira, who's actually still with us, she's 90 in December, but he and Moira would, you know, be very hospitable, and they loved people to come around. And, you know, when I went to England, of course, I stayed with him, and as a young lad in my teens, he introduced me to Chick Corea. He was very up with the times. Ooh. This was in mid-70s when Chick was really starting to get well known. He said, listen to this, Chick Corea, he said. I said, who? Chick Corea, I'd never heard him. It was 1973, I was about 15. You know, my head was turned around, you know. And then I remember also, I was very into classical music, of course, I still am. I was getting into classical piano repertoire. And he said, do you have all the, I think I've got a couple of the Beethoven sonatas and a bit of Chopin. I told him what I had. Anyway, he was gone for a day and he came back with boxes, and he'd been to all the publishers and he got me all the Beethoven sonatas and all the Chopin ballades and the nocturnes, boxes of, you know, folios that I had to take back to Australia and that I still have, you know.
Wow.
He was just like that.
He just made things happen.
He made things happen, and he, it was just very warm and very caring.
Now, some people like to, I guess, place musicians and their music in a sort of a spectrum of relevance, ranging from music of the day or pop music to symbolic of the era or symbolic of the genre or to timeless or classic. In terms of Ike Isaacs, where do you believe he sits on this type of spectrum, if it's fair to even sort of suggest?
It's a good question. I think I would go for the word timeless because, I mean, his jazz was fairly modern. It was kind of post-bebop. Bebop happened when he was a young lad, and then he was aware of some of the more modern harmonic things. But his own spirit was very questing and very modern, particularly harmonically. And he was aware of classical music because there were other classical musicians in the family. In fact, his brother, his younger brother, my other uncle, was quite a well-known classical violinist in London. So he was aware of Bartok and things like that. So he was quite modern for a man of his age, born in 1919, and quite questing. And he was very open about it. He wouldn't play like that, but he was very enthusiastic about fusion and jazz rock. He knew John McLaughlin as a young lad there. You know, he sort of, John used to come and spend some time with Ike before he got into his real mission, you know, with the fusion and Mahavishnu thing. And Ike loved that. He loved a lot of things, you know, even avant-garde things. It probably wasn't his exact cup of tea, but he was very open. He would say, it's valid. He loved that word, valid. It's either valid or it isn't. And I think his idea was that if it was coming from the human spirit, it was valid.
And he was a key figure in really the revival of the hot club sound, wasn't he? Because once Stefan Grappelli got to London, who does he call, you know?
So, well, he actually called on Ike to play on all his international tours, not just in London. Disley was the leader of that trio, which is two guitars and bass, was the hot club trio format. And Grappelli, sort of one of the incarnations that Grappelli had of that, it's sort of stepping into the Django Reinhardt shoes, was with Ike, you know, and they toured a lot. But also he was responsible for a lot of popularizing of the guitar in the 50s, jazz guitar. Obviously it was pre-rock now, but in the 50s, late 50s, and he'd only recently come to London, the BBC had a weekly program called Guitar Club, which is a live music program. There's a lot of live to air programs in those days, not so many these days. It still happened, but it was, you know, before television. And Ike was the leader of the resident group for the Guitar Club, and they just talk about the guitar. Ike would write arrangements every week, and there'd be two or three other guitarists and bass and drums, and they'd play some songs. And I saw in the biography of Andy Summers, who's the guitarist in The Police, you know, the great band with Sting. And he talks about being a young kid in London and listening to the BBC Guitar Club, and he mentions hearing Ike and the other guitarists. So, and those days there used to be quite a lot of albums of guitar music, you know, like several guitars playing popular standards. And, yeah, so he was very much a part of that. And then the instrument really took off, of course, with rock and roll. But Ike said, we were sort of living in the guitar age because the guitar sort of started maybe electric guitar with Charlie Christian in jazz, and then it kind of travelled and then became huge, of course, in rock.
And didn't he have an Ibanez named after him as well?
Yeah, there was an Ike Isaacs model of guitar, which, you know, there's been a few guitarists who've had models named after them, and Ike's one of them, and I think he was very pleased with that.
He's sort of under-recorded for the reputation that sort of preceded him.
Especially of his most original work. Yeah, I agree with you.
I'm guessing Sandy White, did she sing with him in London?
Yes, a lot in the 50s, late 50s in London, but she also sang with him when he came to Australia. So she's on the tribute compilation. Dave Smith and Ike were very close. They used to hang out a lot, and I think Ike mentored Dave a bit. He really looked up to Ike and says beautiful things about him. Dennis Cox in Kiama set up a Ike Isaacs International Guitar Competition for young people, which lasted for about 2 years. But Carl Dewhurst, as a very young player, was the first winner of that.
What can listeners expect in terms of repertoire on the 2nd?
Well, you know what? We're going to do some interesting things. It's a gig without a drummer. There's going to be a lot, and I think Ike would approve of this because he liked, you know, there's the CD of his, which we re-released called Intimate Interpretations. That was his name. He liked intimacy. So what we're going to do is there's going to be some solo pieces. There'll be one, each of the guitarists will play a solo piece. I'll play a solo piano piece. Then there'll be a couple of guitars and bass and Sandy singing, almost like the Hot Club of France, but with Sandy. She says she's not a very good violin, but she's a very good Sandy singer. So she'll be singing. And then there'll be, you know, a song with a couple of guitars and bass. And there'll be a song at the end with all of us. So there'll be very much mix and match solos, duos, and larger groups until it's all five at the end. And very much the jazz standards, but very personal interpretations of beautiful jazz standards.
Beautiful. What made him distinctive and stand out from the other guitarists? I mean, I was mentioning off air once again that he seemed a very generous player, egoless player, harmonically advanced, quite chordal. He also ensured that if whoever he was accompanying, he made them sound even better than what they maybe were.
He was a very good accompanist and he was a very good solo player. In fact, I think his solo work is his finest. And there was always a very wistful, lyrical quality about his playing. I think he was at his best doing that. But in terms of extending the guitar, he really found chords and moving inner parts and shapes that were more like what a piano player would do. And in fact, in a way, he was trying to turn the guitar into a piano. And perhaps his big model for that in jazz is the great solo jazz guitarist George Van Epps, who some of your listeners might know. And he was a chord player par excellence. And Ike was a beautiful chord player who also wrote some beautiful tunes too. So, harmonic. And that's what people love. Oh, that chord. And because on a piano, everything's laid out for you. You can find pretty much any chord you want. But on a guitar, you've got to be a bit clever and you've got to be a bit inventive how to sort of get that, you know. We played that Martin Taylor
After Hours,
which was Ike's composition. But what Martin did at the end, which was typical Ike, because it was in D major, but the lowest string of the guitar is E. So right at the end, he actually plays it and tunes it down E flat while he's playing it. And then he tunes it down another semitone to the D. That's called actually scordatura, which is the technique of detuning an instrument. But that's usually done on a sort of, you can set it, there's a thing in rock of doing different tunings on many instruments, but you usually set that up beforehand and stick with it. But I could do it mid-flight. Right at the end, he'd actually just go for it because he wants those notes. So, but he didn't want to have the whole string permanently set up for that note. Ooh, yeah, he'd do it on the fly.
Tell us a little bit about this. This is a piece also written by Ike. It's called Starlight.
Yes.
And it's from this album, We Like Ike. There's a whole host of wonderful artists that
all around the world
that have been influenced by Ike Isaacs in one way or another.
Yes, and we included that track from Ike on it, but that track is actually part of a whole album of solo guitar that we've reissued now, that Ike recorded in 92. Actually, I produced it with him, which was really lovely thing to be in the studio with him and an honour to help him get that down. But we've re-released it now, and that's all solo guitar standards and one original, his own original solo guitar piece called Starlight.
Mark Isaacs, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be here.